Hari Om to all of you.
Hari Om.
Okay, we have completed up to verse number 25, chapter 18 last week. And here Krishna has explained about knowledge, the three types of knowledge, sattvic, rajasic and tamasic. Then he explained about the three types of action, karma, also sattvic, rajasic and tamasic. And now in today's verses, he is going to explain about the actor, the karta, the doer. And what is the nature of the doer? And then there are two more topics. No, there is one more topic about buddhi or intellect, which is also divided into three categories. And then he will discuss about dhritya or what we call self-effort, also is of three types. And if everything is sattvic, if knowledge is sattvic, action is sattvic, the doer is sattvic, the willpower is sattvic, the end result is sukham, that means what type of happiness will you get. And that also is divided into three, sattvic, rajasic and tamasic also. So let us look now at verse number 26 when he describes here what is the nature of a sattvic karta. How do you define a person who is a sattvic, of sattvic nature by his actions? And there are four qualities here given for a sattvic karta. The first quality is mukta sangaha. Sangaha means attachment. Mukta means one who is free from attachment. Attachment to what? Here attachment refers to one who has renounced the hankering for the results of the action. To a sattvic karta, then what is important? It is not that if you do the action, you are not going to get the result. Definitely you are going to get the result. But to a sattvic karta, most important is whether is the action is right. That is the primary criteria for doing any action. Rather than looking at the outcome of the action, whether it is favorable to me or not, what is to be done has to be done. If it is my duty, it should be done. Irregardless of whether doing my duty gives me favorable or unfavorable results. Now, in Tattva Bodha, there is a short text written by Sri Shankaracharya. And there he gives nine qualities for a spiritual person. If you want to progress on the spiritual path, there are nine qualities that we have to imbibe. Viveka, which means, what is Viveka? Viveka is wisdom, you can say wisdom, right? Viveka is wisdom, using the intellect, being very alert about how you live your life. Vairagya is dispassion or withdrawal from wasteful pursuits. Sama and Dhamma is control of your senses and your mind. Uparama, which I'll be discussing now. What is Uparama? Because it relates to this quality of Mukta Sangha. Titiksha means having the forbearance. You must have the willpower to maintain your path. Shraddha is faith. Samadhana is being single-pointed, being not losing sight of your goal. And finally is mumukshutva, the desire for moksha. So here, one of the qualities which out of the nine which he gave is called Uparama, U-P-A-R-A-M-A, Uparama. Very loosely defined, Uparama means getting back to yourself. Getting back to yourself. Now, Shankara defines this word, Uparama, as Swadharma What is the definition of Uparama? Swadharma Anushthanam Eva. A-N-U-S-T-H-A-N-A-M. What is Uparama? Uparama is Swadharma Anushthanam Eva. What it means is this. Swadharma can be broken into two words. Swa means your own. Everybody has their own. What? Dharma. Each of us have our own dharma. Duty. Now when we say duty, meaning what is to be done. You cannot say, I don't feel like doing this. That is, then it's duty means you can't say, I don't feel like doing this. You cannot say, I don't feel like doing this, therefore I don't want to do it. What is to be done? Even you don't feel like doing it, you have to do it. And what is not to be done? What is not to be done? Even you feel like doing it, you shouldn't do it. So last week, in fact, I remember Sister Huri asked an interesting question. We say duty must be done. And almost, if you look at everything actually is duty, isn't it? So what, I am a parent, I have to look after my children, I have to look after my parents, my aged parents, I have to look after my in-laws and this, and I go to work, I've got duty. So what is it which is not duty? That's the question she asked. I couldn't answer. And I started thinking about it. What do you mean by what is not my duty? What do you consider not your duty? Right. So what is not duty? That's the question.
Doing somebody else's duty. Somebody else's duty.
Paradharma, yes, that also you can say, doing somebody else's duty. But to us, what does it mean by not duty? Because here he says, what is not to be done, even you feel like doing it, you shouldn't do it. That is Uparama. So what is not your duty? Going to parties, is it your duty?
Obligation.
Is it an obligation? Going for a movie, is it your duty? Wasting time watching television, is it a duty? You see? So if you really look at it, where are we wasting our time? Doing our duties, we cannot say we want to avoid. Other things which are not our duty, we can avoid. It's not our duty. We don't have to do it. We ourselves are wasting our time doing things which are not really important to be done. Therefore, first of all, what is to be done, I do. What is not to be done, I can disregard it. I can disregard it. Okay? And what do you mean by duty? Duty varies from time and place. Right? And different people at different times play different roles. In different places, we play different roles. And what is the advantage when we do our duty without any attachment for the results? What is the biggest advantage? There is no punya and papam. True, that's true. What is the biggest advantage to us?
You control
your raga dvesha. You master your likes and dislikes. Otherwise, we are always doing every action based on likes and dislikes. But when we drop our attachment to results, just look at the action. Is it my duty? I do it. Then I start to dilute my likes and dislikes. I gain mastery over my likes and dislikes. So one quality of the sattvic doer is mukta sangaha. Be detached, do all the actions without being attached to the results. Second quality.
Can you bring up, as you said, the duty? Huh? When Swami Shivananda met that Indonesia, he thought of going home, the parents, mother was very happy, but he didn't enter the house. So, do you think the son and the duty to the parents, mother's parents?
See, when we talk about Swamiji, sir, they are at a very different level.
He was not a Swamiji, sorry.
No, if he is not a Swamiji, yes, he's got some duty to his parents and all that. But if you have already risen to that level, then the whole world becomes your parents, your whole world becomes your mother and father. Just like our Swamiji, Gita Ashram, once he was already reached that state of enlightenment. So the story was told, one of the nephews heard him talk in a big audience. And after the talk, the nephew went and saw him. And he said, Uncle G, do you remember me? I'm your nephew. He said, what nephew? Everybody is my nephew. I don't call this person my nephew, that person my niece. To me, I'm already beyond that. So then our duty goes to a higher level. But once we have not reached that state of realization, yes, we have a duty to fulfill also, right? Anahamvadi, second quality, free from ego. Anahamvadi, free from ego, meaning you are not prone to thinking, I have done this, I have accomplished this. What it basically means is not claiming ownership to all our actions. Simply meaning, maintain humility. When there is success in any action, you must be constantly aware that it is due to the Lord's blessings. Have to constantly keep our mind on that. So in that way, we don't get carried away and think we've done so many great things. There are so many other people in the world who are doing even more greater things. Thus, always we must maintain that humility and keep on thinking about the Lord in any success, in any achievement we have. Anahamvadi, free from ego. Third quality, in the second line you see, there are few words which are joined together. Dhriti, Utsaha, Samanvita. There are three words there. Dhriti means fortitude. It's a very important quality of a sattvic doer, of a sattvic karta. Dhriti, fortitude means not giving up what you have started. Once you have started on a good work, or any good action, you must not give up despite whatever obstacles. That is dhriti. Somebody who just gives up every time meets an obstacle, then that is not sattvic karta. A sattvic karta is dedicated, he does not give up, he or she does not give up what he has started despite any obstacles. Utsaha. Utsaha means diligence, giving full attention to what you are doing. So as long as you are doing your duty, you give full attention to it, full determination to do the duty, that you will accomplish this, concentrating on the duty itself. And in fact, we have been given this freedom of willpower to put in the full effort into whatever we want to achieve. So we have to use this willpower, and at the same time, while we are using this willpower to keep on our course, we must not forget that there is the play of prarabdha in our lives also. That is something we must not forget. So when we meet obstacles, we must remember there is always the play of prarabdha on our lives. And the interesting story which is told in the Ramayana, when Lord Rama was sent out to exile by his father, and of course his father was totally in state of sorrow, because he was forced to send his son out to exile. And the mother was trying to console Dasarath. And when Lord Rama saw his father crying away, could not be consoled, he told his mother one simple one line. Durlabha hi sada sukham. Durlabha means impossible it is to be sada, always, sukham. In nobody's life we can say that forever my whole life has been nothing but happiness. So why is it durlabha hi sada sukham? Because there is always the play of prarabdha karma in our lives. At any time our lives can be disrupted by this play of prarabdha karma. But a sattvic karta remains positive all the time, not giving in to negative thoughts and not losing sight of his or her goal. So that is Ritu, Utsaha, Samanvita, endowed with this quality. Fourth quality, Nirvikaraha, Siddhi, Asiddhi. Unshaken. Nirvikaraha means how you say nirvikaraha, undisturbed. Undisturbed by what? Siddhi, sometimes there is success. Asiddhi, sometimes there is failure also. So, unshaken, unaffected by success and failure. Now, what do we mean by unaffected by success? How does success affect us? How does success? It makes us arrogant, it makes us proud. Therefore, we must not get carried away by our success, not be affected by success. And when there is failure, we should not go into depression and worry and blame others also for our failures. So therefore, a mind that maintains equanimity through success and through failure maintains that balance of mind. And these are the four qualities that Krishna says, Uchyate, such is said to be Sattvika Karta, the nature of a Sattvika doer. Now, 27, we come to Rajasik Karta. Now, what is the difference between a Sattvik Karta and a Rajasik Karta? The difference is, or the similarity is, both are hardworking. We cannot say the Rajasik Karta is not hardworking. He is equally hardworking and resourceful as the Sattvik Karta. Both have got great willpower to achieve what they want to achieve. But the difference is what? The Rajasik Karta is only interested, whose motive is only selfish in nature. He only considers his own benefit and not the welfare of others. So whatever action he performs, a Rajasik Karta is only interested in his own success, in his own rewards. So there is, for a Rajasik Karta, there is material growth, there is pain, there is success, but there is spiritual stagnation. There is no spiritual fall, but there is spiritual stagnation. So six qualities of a Rajasik Karta are given here. First quality given is verse number 27, Ragi. Ragi means, comes from the word raga, highly attached. See, the other one is Mukta Sangha, but Rajasik person is totally opposite. Highly attached to what? Attached to his power, attached to his position, to his wealth, and will try all sorts of means, adharmic means, to hang on to the power, to hang on to the wealth or whatever position. And again, if we look at Tattva Bodha, the nine qualities we talked about just now, one of the qualities Shankara gave was Vairagya. See, Raga is attachment. Vairagya means devoid of attachment, devoid of Raga. And what do you mean by devoid of attachment? Again, Shankara defines the word Vairagya as Iha Swarga Bhogeshu Ichha Rahityam. Very simple. Rahityam means absence of. Rahityam, R-A-H-I-T-Y-M, Rahityam. Absence of what? Bhoga. Bhoga means desire. Desire for what? Two things. Iha Swarga. Iha means enjoyments which we get here right now while we are living. Swarga means what? Enjoyments in heaven. So to have Vairagya means you are not desirous of any enjoyments here, nor are you doing any actions to attain any enjoyments in heaven also. Therefore, many people think Vairagya means turning away from all the worldly pleasures. This does not mean turning away. Because physically you can turn away, but where do the thoughts still lie? In your mind. So you cannot run away from the world. You cannot run away from the attractions of the world. So how can Vairagya be developed? What do you mean thus by Vairagya? How can you practically practice Vairagya? You cannot run away from the world. You have to be engaged in the world. There are all sorts of attractions in the world. So how can you practically approach Vairagya? You can have higher thoughts, yes, that's true. You can how you say, you can develop higher goals, higher values in life. And secondly, you must understand, one must have an objective outlook in life. We recognize a spiritual person does not mean you say, I don't want money. You need money. You have to pay your bills. You have to buy food. You have to take care of your family. So, being objective means I understand the importance of money and possessions in my life. However, I do not give them undue importance. I do not only say money is everything in life. I also understand that I need to have material and spiritual growth. So I give equal importance to both aspects of my life. So one does not just give prominence only to money and enjoying pleasures. I know that is important, money is important, I have to work hard. But at the same time, I know I have to develop my spiritual nature, my spiritual character. So unless there is a wrong understanding, what is this Ragi? Ragi means wrong understanding of these people to think that money is everything in life. That once I have money, I will have all the pleasures and happiness. I will never be unhappy. But that is the false thinking of such people. So, Ragi is one quality of these people who give extra importance only to material pursuits. Second quality, karma phala prekshu. Karma phala, you can understand, is the fruit of your actions. Prekshu means always being wanting, having selfish, what you call it, always hankering for selfish results, wanting more and more and more. Of more power, more money, more fame, etc. So the more and more your mind is focused on only material pursuits, where has a person got time to develop their spiritual pursuits? That's why the saying is, a bogi cannot be a yogi. What is a bogi? One who wants to enjoy. A bogi cannot be a yogi. You cannot be going on the spiritual path if all the time you only want to have enjoyments for your selfishness. So that is the second quality. Third quality, lubdha. Lubdha means greedy, person who is greedy. One who always compares himself to what others have. And either you try to take away from others if they have more than you, or you are constantly not happy to see others getting more than you or progressing faster than you. So lubdha is basically greedy. Fourth quality, himsa atmakaha. Himsa, you know, is violence. Ahimsa is not violence. This is himsa, violence. Atmakaha means one who has a tendency for violence, who is constantly prone not only to verbal violence, physical violence, but also mental violence. Always thinking violent thoughts, how to harm people, how to bring down people, how to cheat people. So always very violent thoughts. Violent, abusive language, violent physical actions also. So through his or her actions causes harm or destruction to others, again for the sake of selfish gains. Asuchi. Suchi is purity, asuchi is impure. Impure at what? Again at all three levels. Physical, verbal and mental also. So one who uses foul language, one who uses crooked actions and has crooked thoughts also. And the sixth quality is harsha sokha anvitaha. Harsha is joy. Sokha is sorrow. Anvitaha means subject to continuous fluctuation of joy and sorrow. And this reflects a very highly turbulent and emotional mind. A mind that is subject to violent mood swings. Sometimes very extremely happy if he gets what he wants. Sometimes suddenly gets very angry, very agitated because something does not go according to his way. So one who is constantly fluctuating between joy and sorrow. What does this indicate? this person is not a master of his or her mind. He is unable to control the fluctuations of the mind. And Krishna says, Karta Prakirtita Rajasa. Parikirtita means one who has all these qualities, Parikirtita, is declared to be a Rajasic Karta, of Rajasic nature. Now, Krishna has explained about Sattvic and Rajasic Karta. So, now he talks about the Tamasic Karta. What is the Tamasic Karta in verse 28? Tamasic Karta, see, a Sattvic Karta is interested in spiritual growth. A Rajasic Karta is interested in material growth. What about Tamasic Karta? What type of goal is he interested in? What type of goal? He has no goal. Neither is he interested in spiritual growth, neither is he interested in material growth also. Now, not because he's become a jnani, he's above everything. Right, so his tamasic karta because out of his laziness. So what are the qualities of a tamasic karta? How do you identify a tamasic karta? Ayuktaha. Ayuktaha means one who is unsteady. Unsteady means not who is mad, but one who is inattentive to duties. Why? Because always distracted with mundane thoughts. Unimportant things, such a person is distracted. So, Ayukta means one who is unfocused, whose mind is changing continuously, who's got no orderliness in life. Ayuktaha. Prakrita. Prakrita means naive person. Unrefined intellect, childish in thinking, okay, has no purpose or goal in life at all, and naive in the way of living. So that is the nature also of a tamasic karta. Very naive, because why? A tamasic karta does not want to get advice, does not want to get any, doesn't want to read the scriptures, doesn't want to take the advice of a guru or friend. Because why? He is just not interested. So, remains naive all the time. Stabdaha, another very important quality of a tamasic karta. Stabdaha means unbending, stubborn. Will not accept any advice from higher authority, from elders, from parents. And sometimes you see this, that's why unfortunately in teenagers, so much you tell them, they just don't want to change. Because they feel that they are right, they don't want to change. And this is not only in teenagers but also in adults also, who feel that they are right. Whatever people tell them, they refuse to listen also. So to elders, to parents, to teachers, to saints, to sages, to scriptural teachings, everything they are not interested to listen. Sataha. Sataha means a deceitful person. Why is he deceitful? Why is he deceitful? Why do you call a tamasic person a deceitful person? In what way can he be deceitful? What does he want to avoid the most? Do work. So this is a person who will find ways and means to avoid work. Give all kinds of excuses. Why this cannot be done, why that cannot be done, why this is not done, you'll find 101 excuses. So a very deceitful person, constantly telling some kind of lies to get out of any duty and out of any responsibility. Nice kritikaha, wicked person. Why wicked? Tamasic people end up actually destroying themselves and destroying others, their family members, their loved ones, etc. So by their actions they become wicked. You have such people fall into categories of alcoholics, drug takers, etc. So wicked people, hurting themselves and hurting others also. Alasaha, favorite pastime of tamasic people, laziness. Okay, tries to avoid as much as possible all his responsibilities and duties, except two things in life. Eating and sleeping. eating and sleeping. That's it. No other goals in life. Visadi, morose. Morose meaning always gloomy, moody, sulking. So, basically a person who's constantly given in to lamentation and worry. Constantly worrying and worrying and worrying. Dirgha Sutri, procrastinating. A very common example of tamasic people. Why always procrastinating? Because, why always procrastinating? Who is the person who always procrastinates? Who is the person who always procrastinates? When a person cannot make a decision, what do you do? If you are too lazy to even think, shall I do this, shall I do that, let me not think. So what do? Procrastinate, leave it till tomorrow. Then tomorrow comes, never mind, leave it till tomorrow, leave it till next week. Procrastination is a very, very, prominent quality of a tamasic person. Procrastinating. What can be done today, do tomorrow. What can be done tomorrow, do next week. So constantly procrastinating. Because confusion of mind, unable to decide or doesn't want to decide. And Krishna concludes by saying that such a person, karta tamasa uchyate. Uchyate, such a person is said to be a tamasik, karta, who has all these qualities. Now therefore three types of kartas or doers are there. So therefore, how do shastras, how do scriptures motivate a tamasik karta? How do you motivate a tamasik karta? Who is lazy, who doesn't want to do anything, tries to avoid duties and responsibilities? How do you motivate a tamasik karta?
Rewards.
Children, yes, you can do. You say, no, do this duty, then I give you a bar of chocolate. But adult, you can't give chocolate, so what do? That's why the rituals and prayers are prescribed for such kind of people. Go to temple, break one coconut, go around the idol a few times. Some kind of activity you will do. Get involved in something. Doesn't matter whether you believe it or don't believe it. That's how we get people to start being active. So, rituals and prayers are basically prescribed to keep tamasic people constantly active until they become a rajasic karta. Then from rajasic karta to sattvic karta, they prescribe mantras, chanting the mantras, because the rajasic person's mind is highly turbulent. So how do you bring the mind under control? Through prayers, through chanting, through meditation, all this you bring the mind under control until you become a sattvic karta, and then sattvic karta to transcend must resort to jnana yoga. So these are all the various yogas which are prescribed. Now in verse 29 we come to the next topic, which is called dhriti. Now dhriti, actually two topics are covered here in the next few verses. Buddhi means intellect and dhriti means fortitude. So here Krishna addresses Arjuna as Dhananjaya. So you can see the word there in the last line, Dhananjaya. Dhananjaya means dhanam is wealth. Jaya means one who is a winner of wealth, Dhananjaya. And here again, every time when Krishna uses some form of address for Arjuna, or Arjuna uses a different form of address for Krishna, has some kind of relevance to the verse. So here when Krishna addresses Arjuna as Dhananjaya, he wants to encourage Arjuna, saying that in all your past battles, you have gained so much of victory. We know Arjuna was the most successful warrior. He had gone into all battles. He was successful and victorious in all his battles. So much of wealth and fame. So what is telling Arjuna? In the same way, you can also gain success and victory on the spiritual path if you have the right intellect and if you have the right fortitude also. So he's addressing Arjuna as Dhananjaya, and he tells Arjuna here, in verse number 29, he says, Srunu, listen. Meaning, I am going to tell you now something very important. Srunu, What is the important thing? Vedam. Vedam means classification. Classification of what? Two things. Buddhi and Dhriti. So if you look at the first line, Vedam, Buddhi, Dhriti. Vedam means the differentiation or the classification of Buddhi, means intellect. Dhriti means fortitude. Fortitude goes with the intellect, so that's why it's taking these two topics together also. And since the intellect is a very special equipment that a human being is exclusively blessed with, we should know how to master this intellect and help us to attain our goals. And an intellect, it's not only important just to have the sharp intellect. If you have a sharp intellect, you know what goal you want to reach, but if you don't have dhriti, means self-effort or fortitude, all your ideas are wasted. Many people have great ideas, you can give great lectures, we should do this, we should do this, do that, but in the end, nothing is done. Right? So, intellect, buddhi must go together with dhriti. We have the right ideas, we have the right goal in life, but it must be backed with the right willpower also, dhriti, right? Otherwise, the right thinking is there, but no commitment to action is there. So what it says here, this buddhi and dhriti also, gunata trividam, it is divided trividam in three ways, based on the gunas. So again, sattvic, rajasic, tamasic will determine the type of intellect and the type of self-effort we have also. So he says here that I am going to explain to you asesena, means very elaborately, because these are two very important topics we must know also. So asesena and prataktvena means very clearly. Krishna says, I am going to now explain to you what is a sattvic intellect, so you may know how to harness a sattvic intellect. What is sattvic willpower? So at least you can harness these two qualities, you will succeed on the spiritual path. So now he comes to verse 30, when he explains first what is sattvic intellect. So what is sattvic intellect? Sattvic intellect is, see the word there, pravritti. Pravritti means path of action, life of activity, life of karma. A person is dedicated to taking up all duties and responsibilities and discharging them accordingly. So on the initial path of life, karma is very important. We learned why is karma important? What is the purpose of karma yoga? To purify. So we must understand the importance that when we start our journey, karma yoga is very important. We cannot bypass karma yoga and say, since jnana yoga leads to moksha, let me just drop karma yoga and jump to jnana yoga. That is not the right way. We have to go through, and remember, what did Arjuna want to do? He wanted to drop all his duties, run away and take sannyas. Yet what did Krishna tell him? You are not ready for it. Mentally, you are not ready for it. You go and fight. Fight, but with the right attitude. Do your duty with the right attitude. So therefore, pravritti means one should be very alert. What is the purpose of karma yoga? And why I should do all my duties? And even there are rituals which are prescribed in the karma kanda of the Vedas. As family members, as family people, there are certain rituals we also have to do. Like during the birth of a child, when we move into a new house, we invoke the grace of the Lord, we start a new business, or whatever we do. So there are particular rituals which should not be avoided. We should do those rituals as part of our duty and responsibility to the Lord also. So, pravritti means path of action, life of activity. Nivritti. Nivritti is path of renunciation. When is the time to do activity? When is the time to withdraw? We cannot simply just decide we want to do activity or withdraw. So nivritti means when we have to understand ourselves, when I reach a certain level of purification, when I have control over my mind, my senses, that is the time I should now reduce my duties and responsibilities. I should reduce prayers and rituals, and I should engage my time in Jnana Yoga, Shravanam Mananam. To know that also is not very easy. That's why one must have a very clear intellect. When I should be engaged in action, when I should be, when I should drop these actions also. So both, Krishna says, Yaha Veti means, Yaha Veti, you can see the third line. Yaha Veti means one who understands. One who understands when I should be doing action, when I should be dropping action and giving my time to Jnana Yoga, path of renunciation. One who very clearly understands this, he says, what else you should understand? On the path of Karma Yoga again, there are two types of karma. On the path of Karma Yoga, our actions can lead us to two different directions. One type of karma we do can give us a lot of material growth. In the scriptures, that is called path of prayers. P-R-E-Y-A-S, prayers. Prayers means that path of, it's a pleasant path. They call path of the pleasant, it's called prayers. That means I can get a lot of material growth, I can get a lot of possession, I can get a lot of comforts and relaxation. That is one. If I do my karma, that is one direction. And the other is karma can lead to inner purification, which is path of Shreyas. So one is path of pleasant, one is path of good. Material growth won't give you purity of mind. So one must understand very clearly. One is for my material comfort, one is for my inner purification. So what is for my material growth, that falls under sakama karma. Kama is desires. Sakama means doing actions prompted by desires. And the other is nishkama karma, which is desires, but what we call selfless desires. That is nishkama karma. So what must one be clear about? There are two words here. In fact, four words we have to look at in the second line. First word is called karya. So you see karya. Karya means what are my duties that I should do. Nishkama karma. These duties must be performed, must never be given up. And I must understand that I am performing all these duties for the purpose of purification. That means all my activities, whether spiritual or whether what we call worldly activities, I must know with what right attitude I should do all my duties for purification. So karya means I know what are the right way to do all my duties and responsibility. Akarya means sakama karma, selfish activities that lead to spiritual degradation. So therefore I must know the difference between what is karya, what is akarya. What will lead me to spiritual purity? What will lead me to spiritual degradation? Karya, akarya, I must know what is the difference. See, just like many people give dhanam, they feel I give dhanam, I am a very spiritual person. But what we have studied here, is just giving dhanam makes you spiritual? What is it that makes your act spiritual? The attitude with which you give. So the same action, I must understand the difference. One becomes karya, which leads me to spiritual growth by giving dhanam. Another is the same action I am doing dhanam, but leads to my spiritual degradation if done with ego, if done for some other selfish motive. So karya, akarya, one must be very clear. What is selfless action? What is selfish action? Karya, akarya. The other two is bhaya, abhaya. So you see karya, akarya, bhaya, abhaya. Bhaya means fear. Abhaya means fearlessness. What is it that brings, what is it that is our source of fear? Our source of fear is always because of the insecurity we have about tomorrow, what will happen if I don't have this, what will happen if this person is not there, what will happen. There is always that source of insecurity in us. So what is it that is causing our insecurity higher? And how do I reach a position of abhaya, a source of fearlessness? How do I cultivate that inner security? And again, the scriptures tell us, as long as we depend on the external world for our security, we will never be secure. Because why? No object, no person, no situation in life can give you permanent security, peace of mind, because every object, every person, every situation itself is temporary. Right? What about Swarga Loka? Permanent or temporary?
Temporary.
So I have to be very clear, I have to understand that I should not seek the security from the world. Because I'm insecure, I go and seek from the world, what happens to my insecurity? I am already insecure. I go and seek happiness from a world which is insecure. Insecure plus insecure becomes insecure. He cannot become secure. But if I am insecure and I seek my source of security from the Lord, which is the only thing permanent, then what is the end result? I will develop security, inner security. So to understand the difference between bhayam and abhayam, security and non-security also is very important. Right? In fact, we think the more and more I acquire, I will be very secure. Isn't it? That is what most people think. They think that if I have more money, more possession, more car, more houses, I will be very insecure. But who is the person who needs the most bodyguards? Not the poor person. It's the rich person who needs to surround himself with alarms, security alarms, bodyguards and everything. Because why? He feels insecure. And the more you have, do you feel secure? No. So, we have to understand this. What is my source of security and what is my source of insecurity? So that is called bhayam and abhayam. Next quality, bandham and moksham. Third line, you see two. Bandham and moksham. Bandham is what are the actions that will create a bondage. I have to be very clear about it. I got to understand which action of mine creates a bondage, I should avoid that action. Moksha means which are the actions which will lead me to moksha, to liberation. I have to also understand the difference between them. So, what is a sattvic intellect? A sattvic intellect is one that knows the difference very clearly about what is pravrittim, path of action, what is nivrittim, path of renunciation, what is karya, what is the right action, akarya, what is wrong action, what is bandham, what is moksham. We must be very clear about all these facts of life. So there should be no confusion. I mean, these are the technical terms which we should familiarize ourselves with. We should be very clear. Because we are doing actions, what actions lead to bondage, what action leads to moksha? What action causes my insecurity, what action increases my security? So all this I have to be very clear. An intellect that is very clear about all this, Krishna says, such an intellect is a sattvic intellect. Now he talks about the rajasic intellect. And what is the rajasic intellect? A rajasic intellect is basically one that is very unclear, which is wakeful, which has got doubtful knowledge. A rajasic person thinks he knows everything, but actually he is not really understanding what is all his action, what is right action, what is wrong action. So, a rajasic person is one who prajanati, you can see in the third line, prajanati means one who understands what? prajanati ayathavat. Ayathavat means wrongly understands or does not understand. Ayathavat, who wrongly understands what? So we come back to the first line. Dharma adharma. What is dharma? What is the definition of dharma, which is virtue? Which is actions which are sanctioned by the scriptures? Dharma. Adharma, which is vice, vice, which is prohibited by the scriptures. A rajasic person is utterly confused. He has a lot of doubts. What is dharma? What is adharma? And what is the biggest problem? Why are rajasic people so confused about what is dharma, adharma? Why are they so confused? Lack of knowledge is there. But what is it that really is so difficult for us to understand sometimes what is dharma, adharma? What is the biggest problem in understanding? You see, sometimes we know what is right, what is wrong. But we do what is wrong and avoid what is right. And one of the main reasons is because actions done in dharma and adharma, it is said that the cause is unseen, the result is unseen. It's not that today you tell a lie, tomorrow a stone will drop on your head. It's not like that. The result is not seen. So when we don't experience the result of our wrong actions, then we think, what is wrong with doing adharma? There is an unseen result. We may not see it straight away, we may not experience it in this lifetime, and that is why we cannot distinguish. Really, those who are doing dharma don't seem to be prospering. Those who are doing adharma seem to be prospering. So there is some confusion now. Does dharma really help? Is adharma really going to be punished? So rajasic people are confused because there is a future unseen result. And the biggest example we can see is Arjuna's confusion on his battlefield. How did Arjuna define sin? If you go back to chapter 1, verse 45, you can see Arjuna's confusion there. When he defines sin, page 21, because of Arjuna's confusion, what is his definition of sin? He says, what a great sin we are going to commit by slaying our own people. So he looks at killing now in a war as a soldier as a what? Great sin. But actually, what is it? Is it a sin or is it his dharma? So it cannot be a sin. A soldier killing on the battlefield is not a sinful action. The same soldier goes back home and kills his neighbor, that is sin. But look at Arjuna's confusion. He considers doing his dharma a sin. But then what is he thinking? He says taking up the duty of a sannyasi, that is not a sin. He doesn't mind abandoning the battlefield, running away from his duty. He doesn't consider that a sin, but he considers taking up sannyas as a great virtue. So that is confusion. And what did Krishna tell him now? In the same chapter 1, verse 33. We go to chapter 1, verse 33. Hitler.
Fighting and killing by the law.
Okay. See, the soldiers are doing their duty, what they are supposed to do. If they were to run away from the battlefield, it is considered abandonment of duty. Avoid, or it's away without leave. So they are doing their duty. If they feel that they should not be fighting, then they should leave the, not become a soldier. But once you have taken the duty of soldier, you have gone to the battlefield, then it is your duty to follow the orders of the major or general or whatever it is. So it is doing your duty, yeah. But of course, they are only fighting for adharma. That is a problem. They are doing their duty, but they are standing on the wrong side. They are fighting for adharma, against dharma.
So Duryodhana, he is also fighting.
But fighting for what?
Wrong reason, but he is fighting to defend himself.
To establish adharma. He wants to destroy dharma and establish adharma. So the reason, the rationale for fighting is wrong. Where is that verse I'm looking for now? Chapter 1, verse 33.
Chapter
2,
verse
33. Is it chapter 2, verse 33? Chapter 2, verse 33, yeah. So, this is what Krishna is telling. Arjuna is saying, fighting the war is a sin. Krishna is telling him what? If you do not wage such a righteous war, chapter 2, verse 33, page 39, abandoning your duty and losing your reputation, you will incur sin. You see, totally different. Arjuna thought fighting the war is sin. Krishna says, no. You abandon this battlefield, not only you lose your reputation, but you will incur sin because you are not doing your duty. So, a totally wrong understanding, because Krishna is telling him, this is a dharma yudham. It is a dharmic war you are fighting. So, if you abandon a dharmic war, you are creating sin for yourself. So do not run away from the battlefield. So one who wrongly understands dharma adharma, number one. Number two, what is what else is rajasic rajasic intellect here? Karyam cha akaryam. Karyam, what is to be done? Which action will bring me punyam? Akaryam, what action I should avoid which gives me papam? A rajasic intellect also is not clear or confused or doesn't understand what is the right action and what is the wrong action. Again, why? Because they don't want to listen to the scriptures, they don't want to listen to the gurus. So they have some confusion. And again, as I say, it all comes back from our experience. Many a times we see people doing adharma, but they are prospering and prospering and prospering. So we think, maybe actually where, what is right karma and wrong karma? And same time, people who are doing good are suffering and suffering and suffering. And therefore there is some confusion. What is right karma, what is wrong karma? But at its given time, at its given place, the karma phalam will come. You cannot escape from the law of karma. We have to understand this. If not in this life, in next life, somewhere you have to pay back. So, Krishna says, one who doesn't understand dharma and adharma, one who doesn't understand karyam and akaryam, the right action and wrong action, such a buddhi, such an intellect is a rajasic intellect, who does not clearly understand the distinction between this. And what is a tamasic intellect? A tamasic intellect is fully convinced about his wrong knowledge. Now, what is the difference between rajasic and tamasic intellect? Rajasic intellect, there is no conviction. There is only what we call doubting, vacillation. I did this, is it wrong or right? Should I have done this? I shouldn't have done this. So, rajasic buddhi is one which vacillates, which goes from doubt to undoubt. Always unsure what is to be done and not to be done. But what is a tamasic intellect? Tamasic intellect is fully convinced that only his knowledge is correct. Everybody else is wrong, only he is correct. That is the difference between a rajasic and a tamasic intellect. And in a rajasic intellect, there is no doubt in his mind that only he is correct. So, one very classic example of a tamasic intellect is who? In the scriptures, what is a classic example of a tamasic intellect? Dhavan, isn't it? Everybody tells him, you are wrong, right? But he is so convinced that I am doing right. By kidnapping Sita is right. His elder brother Vibhishan told him, you are making the biggest mistake. But he doesn't want to listen. He considers he is right. And of course, there is Duryodhana also, the same thing, so much of advice given, but he felt that he is the only right one.
But isn't that more rajasic because he forbear, he knows the scripture, he knows everything.
Rahul, yes, yeah.
But he chooses to be the...
Correct. But he feels that his way of thinking is right. That means he is still thinking that the scriptures are wrong. You know, like rule number one, rule number two. Rule number one, the scriptures are always right. Rule number two, if the scriptures are wrong, refer to rule number one. But despite knowing the scriptures, he feels that his rationale, his thinking is correct. Kidnapping somebody's wife is correct, nothing wrong with it. Despite having all the knowledge. Why? Because then he considers his knowledge to be more superior. And he follows according to his own knowledge. Doesn't even want to listen to the scriptures. So what is a tamasic intellect? Buddhi, which is avritta. Avritta means that which covers. A tamasic buddhi is one that covers. What does it cover? It covers our intellect. Tamasic intellect is one that overpowers you, totally overpowers you into delusion. So what does he think, a tamasic person? Sarvarthan. Sarvarthan means all the things which are worldly or spiritual matters, whatever it is. Manyate considers viparitan, contrary, totally contrary. Meaning what? Adharma, which is vice, he considers this as dharma virtue. So one who has a total lopsided view of the world. What is wrong? Adharma, he considers it as dharma, that is, it is virtuous. And what is dharma, which is virtuous, he considers it as adharma. So, if somebody sees you going for Gita class, say, where are you going? You say, I'm going for Gita class. What does a tamasic person say? Why are you wasting your time and all that? While he is sitting in a pub and drinking, and he considers that is dharma. But you are going to a Gita class, he says that is adharma, that is wrong, that is waste of time. You know, you are a silly person, you are unnecessarily wasting your time. See, a total twisted way of looking at things. Because he alone has got the conviction that he is right and everybody is wrong. So again, we come back to Ravan, we come to Duryodhan, they all paid the price. They remain on the wrong path thinking that their logic is correct. And what can we do for such people when you see some people, you, no matter how much you tell them, you talk to them, you argue with them, they still don't want to listen. What can you do for such people?
Pray for them.
Just pray for them. Hopefully then there is some punyam somewhere in their life that will come and rescue them also. And we have seen many people, of course, who are so tamasic, but somewhere along the way they change their life for the better also. It has happened also. So such a buddhi, Krishna says, where one sees everything as lopsided, that is considered to be a tamasic buddhi. In fact, Krishna did say in earlier chapter 3 that it's better not to lecture people. How do you change people? Not by lecturing them. By showing good action, by showing positive action, that they will join you, they will follow you. Because these tamasic people, there's no point wasting time lecturing them. They are not ready to listen at all. Yes?
So you mentioned that you're going through the sense, so there's nothing you can do, you can pray for that. Some punyas that have been in the previous life can actually
fructify in this life.
Can actually can make them change.
Correct.
But some tend to sort of associate it with life. The bad times that you're going through.
Yeah, you can say that. Yeah.
But then, can we look at it as one way? Is that we read that as an excuse? Or look at that, hey, you need to realize that you are actually, it's not that you're going through a bad time, but it's just your realization.
Yeah, correct. I mean,
giving an excuse.
He's saying that I'm going through, no, but then it's not that he's going through a bad time. He's very happy what he's doing. He will never consider that he's going through a bad time. As far as he's concerned, you are going through a bad time. He's going through a good time. Right, because he is in a state of delusion. What I'm doing is right, what you are doing is wrong. So for this person to rise above his delusion, possibly need some punyam to come in his life, number one. Or maybe some adverse situation that comes in his life that makes him now turn around and look at God. You know, that person has certain tragedy or calamity in life that makes him start questioning then what is life, and then start looking towards some spiritual answer. So either some situation, or maybe he meets some right guru or meets somebody who changes his way of thinking. That's, sorry, Arachnakara, exactly, another good example, who became Valmiki. So he was fortunate enough to meet, who did he meet? Was it Saptarishis or Narad? He met Narad and who changed his whole life. So if we tell that person, you are wrong, he'll say, no, you are wrong, I am right. Right. That stubbornness is there. And he believes that he is prospering. So I am prospering, everything is happening good in my life. Why you say I am wrong? That is tamasic thinking. Doing wrong and not realizing that you are doing wrong.
It's like karmi, the change. See, like the Buddha, he was very happy, a very happy prince, until he saw the three different situations.
Right.
And that changed him. Yeah.
Again, that is some punyam that has come in his life. Some punyam that has come right in his life. So we mustn't forget there is prarabdha, but at the same time there is self-effort. We have both. We have to make use of both. There is prarabdha, but that doesn't mean I give in to my prarabdha and just say my fortune is like this, my fate is like that, what can I do? No. You have to put in some effort. Unfortunately,
the intellect comes in.
Unfortunately, the tamasic person has a twisted intellect, right? So his intellect is going to be of no use at all until there is something that causes a change in his life. So now, verse 33, Krishna talks about dhriti, effort of free will, which is again of three types again. And what type of goal you accomplish will depend on the type of self-effort that you have also. So what is sattvic willpower? Sattvic willpower is that in which a person devotes all his organs of action, organs of knowledge, to complete the spiritual journey. And all the actions are based on dharma. That is called sattvic willpower. Rather than raga dvesha. A sattvic person does not follow his raga dvesha, follows what is dharma and puts in all the effort to complete the spiritual journey. So what is sattvic? Sattvic willpower means you involves a lifestyle change. You must change from raga dvesha life to life of dharma, according to dharma. That is sattvic willpower. One who is total control of jnana indriyas and karma indriyas. What is rajasic willpower? Rajasic willpower is one that is committed and dedicated to the goal, but not spiritual goal, to material and sensual goal. If he has to destroy others to gain what he wants, he will do so. He will use his powers to destroy others. So, rajasic willpower also has a goal, also has determination, but the goal is all materialistic and sensual in nature. What is tamasic willpower? Tamasic willpower also, he puts in willpower, he also uses a lot of effort. But effort to do what? Effort to avoid everything. Isn't it? That also requires commitment. I don't want to do anything. I am going to avoid all my duties and come what may, I will avoid everything. And why? Because tamasic people also have this attitude that everything in life is destined. No matter what effort I put, also my life only is going to be like this. So I just leave it to my destiny. That is the tamasic willpower, where he does not even believe in his own willpower. So what is the point of putting in any effort? So, right. Kumbhakarna also, yeah, he was forced to fight. But he is also a very tamasic by nature also. So what is, now Krishna defines in verse 33, what is sattvic willpower? He says, dhritya or dhriti, the willpower by which Dritya, look at the third line, the word yogena. Dritya yogena. Through the power of yoga, here means one who is steadfast, following the path of dharma, all the spiritual goals. One is steadfast by following the path of dharma. Dharayate sustains. In order to follow the path of dharma, this sattvic person has a mastery over what? Kriya, meaning the functions. Functions of what? So if you look at the second line, manaha, prana, indriya. The three things which must be totally in our control. A sattvic person puts in all effort by harnessing or mastering these three great powers which we all have. What are the three powers? Manaha, mind. Is very much in control of his thoughts, his mind. What is his objective in life, his or her objective in life? What is his goal? How he is going to achieve it? He is in total control of his mind. Manaha. Okay? What are the right type of thoughts? Healthy thoughts, avoiding unhealthy thoughts. Second is pranaha. Pranaha here refers to the karma indriyas, the organs of action. The hands, feet, organ of reproduction, organ of excretion and vocals, speech. So one who is a total master in control of the mind, control of the organs of action and indriyas. So you see manaha, prana, indriya. Indriya is the five organs of perception. The eyes, the ears, the nose, the tongue, the skin. All these functions, manaha, prana, indriya, a sattvic person has under his total control. So that means, that's why you see that the picture of the chariot, Arjuna, Krishna chariot. Actually it tells you the whole your whole Bhagavad Gita. If you understand the chariot, you don't have to come back for Bhagavad Gita classes. So that whole thing explains the philosophy of the Gita in one simple picture, where the horses represent the five senses. The chariot represents the body. Arjuna represents the soul who occupies the chariot. So if the chariot is destroyed, what does Arjuna do? He goes to another chariot.
Jiva.
The jiva, you can say the jiva. So Arjuna represents the jiva. Horses represent the senses. The mind is represented by the reins. And who has the control of the reins? Krishna, which represents the intellect. So if that intellect is pure, the senses and the mind are in control of the pure intellect, the direction of the chariot will go in the right direction. That is what the whole chariot is about, the depiction of the chariot. In fact, it is all beautifully explained in the Katha Upanishad. The whole chariot allegory is explained in one section of the Katha Upanishad. It's called Rath Kalpana, the imagery of the chariot. So it explains everything in detail about the chariot and what each thing stands for and what is the purpose of the whole thing. So here also what he is saying, a sattvic person with sattvic willpower is one who has totally harnessed the power of his mind, the senses and the organs of action. He is in total control. And this also again is mentioned in Tattva Bodha by Adi Sankaracharya, one of the nine qualities we spoke about, as samadhana. Samadhana means one-pointed mind, single-pointed mind. A very focused mind. So one must have this capacity to keep the mind on the right track, not lose sight of the ultimate goal. And it is true, the mind may wander from time to time. We cannot stop the mind from wandering, because even in chapter 6, Krishna said, the mind is as turbulent as the wind. But he gave Arjuna two disciplines to harness the power of the mind. You remember the two disciplines? You We're in chapter 18 already, so you should know chapter 6 already. If you forgot chapter 6, then we are in meet trouble already. Vairagya and what was that? Vairagya is dispassion and what was it? Practice, abhyasa. Abhyasa and vairagya. Practice, practice, practice. Practice to constantly keep, be very alert where your mind is going. Be very alert. So, this discipline and focus must be there by constantly practicing to keep the mind alert, to always cultivate higher thoughts, higher values, good thoughts, good goals in life. Of course, everybody is human. Everybody. So that's why even if sages can fail, can understand how much of an effort we have to put also, you know, to go on this path. So with such a disciplined and focused mind, okay, and senses, a person is a master of his life also. Because spiritual life must be taken with commitment. If you don't have commitment, you take it as a hobby, then you are not going to progress at all, or it's going to take many lifetimes to progress. So when a person harnesses all this, so he uses another word in the third line, avya vicharini, unswerving. Harnessing all his powers, he does not swerve away from his goal. He harnesses all the energies of the mind, the senses, the organs of action, and remains committed on that goal also. Such a, what we call a willpower, Krishna says, is a sattvic willpower. That is in total control of your mind, your organs of action, your senses. A disciplined person does not waver, is fully fixed and progresses on the spiritual path. Rajasic willpower, defined in verse 34, is similar to sattvic willpower. But the only difference is, a rajasic willpower is dedicated to reach selfish goals, goals of artha and kama also. And such a person is willing to give up dharma and moksha as long as he reaches his material goals. So one who puts all the time and effort to gain all the material goals. So what is the definition of a rajasic willpower? Here he says, prasangena, prasangena, in third line, prasangena. Prasangena means with intense attachment, with a deep attachment to what? After prasangena, the word is phala kangshi. Phala kangshi means, phala is fruit. Kangshi means desire for fruit. So one who has a very strong attachment for a desire for the result, either material result or sensual result, and that person will put in all the effort to attain the result that he wants. And of course, we have discussed many times that when one has such an intense desire for results, then two things can happen. If you keep on satisfying the desires, it leads to more desires, which leads to greed. And if you don't satisfy the desires, it leads to anger. So what is a rajasic person's life? Basically, either greed or anger, greed or disappointment. It goes on and on and on. So here, what is the rajasic willpower? One that is totally fixated on results, selfish results, not for the welfare of others, but for myself. And a person's life is dedicated to two things only: holding on to what he already has or acquiring what he doesn't have. So here Krishna says, dharayate, this person uses his willpower to dharayate, to hold on to what? Dharma. Now here the word dharma means, does not mean righteousness. It means this person does all the rituals and prayers according to the scriptures in order to gain more and more punya. So this rajasic person hangs on, observes the rituals, does all kinds of prayers, etc., but with the intent of attaining selfish results. So he doesn't do rituals and prayers for the welfare of the world, only does rituals and prayers for himself. Whereas Satvik person does the same prayers for what? Inner purification or for the welfare of the world. A Rajasic person will go ahead and do the same prayers and rituals, but his intention is only for my benefit, to get more power, more fame, more riches, etc.
Some of them, the prayers go down to the
lower beings. Oh, okay, yeah, of course, then there are those who pray for the, you're saying about the destruction of others also. So there is using the prayers for the wrong reason. And what else, not only for dharma, but if you look at that line, in the first line, dharma, kama, artha, these are the three reasons that they hold on to all prayers and rituals. And all their actions are dedicated to dharma, doing prayers and rituals to attain more material pleasures or even swarga loka, kama to attain more and more sensual pleasures, and artha to attain more and more wealth. And Krishna says such a kind of willpower that is so attached and fixated to personal results, where you do prayers and do all your actions only for your benefit, he says such a kind of dhriti or willpower is said to be a Rajasic willpower. Now here we must not misunderstand also. Sometimes we should not look down on such Rajasic people, because in the beginning, if they use prayers and rituals to attain what they want, it's fair enough, because all of us have more or less started on the same journey. We have done prayers and rituals for ourselves. But the thing is, we should then learn to come out of it and understand then to use these prayers and rituals for our inner purification, or at least for the welfare of the world also. So we should not look down upon also Rajasic willpower, where they use prayers and rituals, but although it's for selfish purpose, but the thing is, you have to come out of it, you have to change your direction. So next week when we come back, we'll look at verse 35 at what is tamasic willpower, and then from there Krishna will talk about the three types of sukham also, happiness. So we end with a prayer. Yeah, please don't forget, next week we have a class, and then the following Saturday there is no class, 26th, right? And then we resume on the first Saturday of September. So please pass these views around. And the Gita Ashram is celebrating the Krishna Janmashtami, the birth of Lord Krishna, with the Gita Ashram from 9 p.m. to 12 p.m. on Monday. So those who want to attend, children are putting up a play, and then there will be bhajans and followed by a prasad. And with a prayer.
Vasudeva Sutam Devam Kansajanuram Ardhanam Devaki Paramanandam Krishna Vande Jagat Guru.
Thank you, Hari.
Yes, attending.